Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and our guest who is in Canada today, we are going to have a very interesting conversation with him. We're going to be talking about his book, Awakening Afterlife. Renee Jorgensen is my guest. Renee, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on the show.
Well, it's a delight. You are a man that is not just a philosopher, but you're a member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies.
Yes.
And at the age of 27, you had your own particular near-death experience. And it started you on a journey that was transformational, is the word that I'd want to use. And you are really very, very interested, I don't want to say the word anxious, but enthusiastic, that's the word I'm looking for, about educating people regarding the near-death experience. Tell us what happened to you.
Well, I had, you could say, a very classical near-death experience where the first part you notice is that you leave your body. And this is something that's, it's difficult to explain, and it's also difficult to understand, but that you're actually able to see yourself, see your own body from the outside. That is something that's very, very strange and something that really notifies you that this is something different than anything you ever tried before. And after realizing I was outside my body, I then met what's usually called the light. It is this kind of energy of warm feelings, of bliss, of love, of joy, of peace that are very, very strong. It's not like anything when we say love or peace in this dimension. We would probably have to multiply it 100 times in the out-of-body state in the other dimension. Some people even say 1,000 times because they had a very strong, strong emotional experience outside the body. And then after experiencing this love, I had what's called a life review. This is where you see scenes of your life flashback before your eyes. And in my case, this was what's called a distressing life review, or it's also been called a negative life review. I would go through negative experiences in my life where I had been hurting other people. So basically, this is a reflection that comes after meeting this love, this light. Then this reflection is called into question about where did you do things that were not aligned with the love and the peace and the joy. So I would have to go through all these scenes of my life where I would hurt other people, like ex-girlfriends or my mother, being angry at my mother or somebody else. And this was all the way back to when I was like in third or fourth grade, when I was actually, there was one scene of teasing a little girl. She must have been in second grade or a class under me. And I had totally forgotten this incident, but here in my life review, it was just like it was happening right now. I was really in it. And you really receive, you become the receiver of your own negative actions. And this is very, very strong emotionally also. So that really, coming back from that, you really have a sense of wanting to change. You want to be good. You want to do good. You want to help others. You want to be compassionate. You want to be loving. And you want to be peaceful. So that was the transforming moment in my experience. I also had, after coming back from the life review, I also had what's called a preview. Here I would see the rest of my life where I would be more loving, I would be more kind to people, I would, you know, in a sense, spread the light to the world around me. So that was, in short terms, my very deep and very profound transformational near-death experience.
What I would like to also share with my listeners is that at 27 years of age, most of us still haven't matured very much as people. And you were really in a very challenging mode in your life. And when I say challenging, you were challenging the universe. You were looking at what's the value of this, what's the value of that. And I was intrigued with this openness that you had about yourself, your own attitudes, and then when you did your experiment, which was with a drug, and to have this strong a reaction to it. And that's one thing that you bring out in the book, is that you're not an advocate of people using drugs.
No, that's true.
You had, this was an experience that had been sort of forced because of this that you were experimenting with, and it just knocked you for a loop. It really gave you, for all intents and purposes, a significant wake-up call, as well as an in-depth insight into yourself and into life in general.
Yes, that's very true. I should say my experience happened during, I should say, with the drug called LSD. Usually I don't advocate it. I don't advocate the use of drugs. But that was actually the trigger in my experience, even though I have learned that the actual trigger fertilized by this drug was a psychological dissolution, you could call a kind of experience of ego death. I had been on a travel where I had met a girl from another country, and our meeting was very transformational, you could say. She was very, interested in getting close to me, and I was trying in a way to be a little close. So she was in a way working on me to enter and get closer and closer, and every time she would open a door and enter me, it would be kind of a fearful situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like kind of like, you know, if you don't want people to get too close to you, you're a little scared, right? But she would actually keep on pushing and keep penetrating me. And at the moment when I had this experience, was under the influence of the drug, but also during her inquiry, she would inquire deep into my personality. And during that inquiry, I had this, you could say it was a kind of psychological dissolution fertilized by the drug. And that's what actually caused me to leave my body, this kind of fear of the ego death in a way. So that was, but leading up to that, as you say, I went through a lot of events in my life. I was actually in the middle of my exams in business school, and just in the middle of everything, my father basically he fell over and died. He had a blood vessel in the brain blow, so he died that same evening. And that was, I got the message the next morning, early in the morning, and that was actually on my birthday. So naturally that shook me up, and I was very confused about everything. I said, hey, I need a break. I need to think about, you know, before I start my career, finish the exam, I need to figure out what's actually going on here, because this event really shocked me. And that's when I decided, instead of taking up a job offer I had, I actually went backpacking for about a year. And that's where I met this girl, and that's where I had the experience. So it was kind of a thing of destiny, you could say.
Mm-hmm. And really, you were in your own way, subconsciously, I think just from what I was able to discern when I was reading your material, you were really searching anyhow, even though you were not waving a flag physically and saying consciously, yeah, go ahead and sock it to me. It was that evolution that allowed this to occur. Now, in the book, you've gone into a lot of the near-death experiences, and you said, in giving statistics, because you're part of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, 37% of people who had a near-death experience did so in a setting that could not be called life-threatening. Now, that's a sizable number.
Yes, very, very sizable, because what actually happened in the near-death research was that, well, if we look at the research, we actually have, in the literature, we have writings all the way back to Plato, the Greek philosopher. He talks about a soldier who actually dies, and he sees this light. It's a brilliant, clear light. It's exactly how we would describe the light in near-death experience. So we have literature going back 2,500 years. But and then we have some other definitions and more literature in the 19th century. But it's not till actually when Raymond Moody in 76, he publishes his book Life After Life. That's actually where it kind of takes off, and the near death. He's the father of the terminology near death experience.
Mm-hmm.
And because he becomes curious about near death experience because he hears two similar stories from people who have been clinically dead and come back and actually tell the same story about this life. Therefore, he focuses his research on people who have been clinically dead, and therefore the term near-death experience. But then later, as this research foundation, the International Association for Near-Death Studies, is founded and it starts to research and study these experiences, it finds out that the terminology near-death cannot really contain this experience because it happens in a lot of different a lot of different situations. And this can something be even people who are not close to death but are in a fearful situation where they mm-hmm. might believe. So the mind triggers this belief, I'm going to die. And that kind of fear triggers the out-of-body experience or the near-death experience. But we also find in deep prayer or in meditation similar things, like, for instance, you might have heard about the Kundalini energy and Kundalini experience. When you analyze this experience and you compare it to the near-death experience, it is actually very, very similar in nature. So what we're dealing with here, and also because this experience can be produced by drugs such as ketamine and LSD, is a really wide phenomenon. It seems that we have this other dimension, this spiritual dimension that exists outside the body when we leave the body, and that you can enter this dimension through different doors, different mm-hmm. paths lead there.
Absolutely. Now, you give some interesting documented reports. One is the U.S. News and World Report. They did a poll in 1997, and they came up with 15 million Americans might have had a near-death experience, and a very famous case was ABC anchor Bob Woodruff, who was almost killed by a roadside bomb in Iraq, and he went through this phenomena and was able to talk about it. Then you talk about a woman by the name of Pam Reynolds.
Yes.
This was interesting.
Yes,
and
because
the question is, how can people have clear consciousness in a state of cardiac arrest with no brain activity? That's a flat EEG.
Exactly.
Tell us that story.
Yeah, that the case of Pam Reynolds in 1991 is actually one of the most famous cases of a near-death research, because she had a brain tumor actually very deep within her brain, and she had to undergo a very, very complicated surgery. It's called Operation Standstill. Basically, what happens during this operation is that the blood is drained from the body and the heart beating is stopped, and she's totally clinically dead. And she was actually clinically dead for a whole hour during this operation, while she was being monitored by EEG measurement, brainwave measurement, and other scientific equipment. So scientifically, from a scientific point of view, her case is the best documented and actually one of the best pieces of evidence we have. And what's really interesting about her experience is that while she's having a flat EEG measurement, meaning no brain activity, during this time she is describing everything that goes on in the operation room. She is describing the instrument used to operate her, and she's also repeating the conversations between the nurse and the doctor during the operation, during the time that she's actually supposed to have a flat EEG. And what this actually very strongly suggests is that consciousness and the brain are separate. They are not one. Actually, that we can have conscious experience outside the brain. And that is really the you can say from a scientific point of view, the evidence that then the next suggestion is then that if consciousness can exist outside the brain, then you can conclude it should also be able to exist without the brain and thereby without the body. And that would then be a suggestion of a proof of the afterlife.
You also bring out a point that doesn't surprise me at all, that the people who had poor eyesight or had been blind since birth, when they go through these experiences, they have full vision. They don't have the limitations of the physical body. Now, to me, that doesn't seem abnormal at all, but to researchers, that seems to be an amazing thing. Why?
Yes, yeah, that's very, very amazing, because what the researchers have done is to say, okay, we've got these stories from these many people. I mean, now it's thousands of people who are telling these stories. So let's try and be skeptical. From a scientific point of view, let's try and be skeptical. After all, that's the paradigm we're in right now. So then this is a researcher, Dr. Kenneth Ring. He said, okay, these people, let's say that they have all watched the same movie. For some reason, all these people who have these experiences, they watched the same movie about somebody who died and saw this light and came back and told the story. So maybe they have been conditioned through their culture and through watching the same kind of movie. So he said, okay, let's then ask people who've had near-death experience who have not seen any movies at all, who have not had any form of conditioning and not had any form of imprints about how this light or how this experience would look like. And therefore, he contacted a group and an organization for blind people. and he found 31 people here, blind people, where 14 had been blind from birth that had had a near-death experience. And what was really interesting was that even the people who had been blind from birth, they were actually describing the exact same thing, seeing the light and having the life reviews that people who were seeing also described. But these people had no way of having imprints or conditioning from anywhere else because they were blind, of course. And also, the mere fact that while being blind, they're not able to see even light or anything, these people also described that they were now in their near-death experience, they were able to see for the very first time. And that is also a thing I mentioned because I find that's a very, very interesting piece of research that Dr. Ring has done here in this case.
You do a lot of historical tidbits in your book. You go into philosophy where you go back to Greece, the time of Plato, and you go into so much information that I think is quite interesting because this is nothing new. People have been experiencing this in different cultures for a long, long time, but in our Western world, we have to deal with semantics of different cultures, different environments, different belief systems. And so lots of times we try to pigeonhole things. And in your book, you have information about a publication called The Great Transformation, which was done by Karen Armstrong. And in talking about Platonic values, Plato's world of ideas, she points out that the Greek idea did not mean idea as we know it in English, but it means a form, a pattern, or essence.
Yes.
So when you're doing interpretation of different things from the past, the semantics are very, very important. And Plato addressed this. But what I really, really was intrigued with is the sections you had on the interconnected universe. And you talked about an Irish physicist, John Bell. What
yes.
was his discovery that was so profound to you?
Well, what happened through the discoveries and the prediction of John Bell was what later led to, in the 1980s, 1984, what's called the Gricean experiment. That is also called quantum entanglement. What that means is that, or some people also call it non-locality. What that means is that it has been proven in 1984 in this experiment, and then later, 10 years later in the 90s, in another experiment, that if you take two particles and split them apart, then they are still entangled. They are interconnected. And what this suggests is because everything was connected at the Big Bang from a scientific point of view, therefore everything is still interconnected today. And what that then suggests is that everything is one. All is one. And what's really interesting about this is that this is the scientific evidence of what religion has talked about, that all is one, all is connected. And this is exactly also the same evidence you have from near-death experiences. My own personal experience and a large percentage of people who have near-death experience explain that everything is connected, everything is one. Because of this entanglement, that's actually why we have the golden rule in religion. And this golden rule in religion, what you do unto another, you do unto yourself, is actually the reason we have these life reviews that I also went through. I mean, if you do something negative to another, you will have to go through that experience in your near-death experience, in your life review, because everything is entangled, everything is interconnected. That is, it is the scientific proof of what religion has talked about as the golden rule and also what we have evidence of in the near-death experience.
Yes, you call it quantum entanglement, the proof that an object over there does care about what you do to another object over here.
Yes, exactly.
Now,
they're entangled. They are interconnected.
Mm-hmm. And the teleportation of thoughts. Well, I've had that experience so many times, it's not even funny. And it's amazing. I mean, there is no limit in mind. There is nothing. Energy is ever present everywhere, period. That's just
yes,
the way it
yes.
is. Now, you use some forms that I, not forms, words that I had not heard before. One is luminiferous aether. Explain
yes.
that. What is that?
Well, that was an old, in the 19th century, physicist who used that terminology to describe the you could say, the fabric of the cosmos, the fabric of the universe. Back then, the term dates back 2,500 years to the Greek philosophers, to Plato and Aristotle. They have always believed that the universe was made of, you can say, this ether is like a divine spirit. That has been believed since the Greek. And in the 19th century, this became really, I mean, the physicists were trying to prove that that is actually the substance of this divine spirit, this ether that the universe is made of. And what you have today is that scientists are trying to prove what they're trying to find, what's called the Higgs particle. And they're doing this right now. They're starting up, actually, I think it's this month at CERN in Switzerland. It's called an atom smasher. It's a very, very big atomic experiment where they have two atoms smashed together. And what they're trying to capture is a Higgs particle. And when they do, I sincerely hope they do, and if they do, that Higgs particle would be arriving from another dimension. And that would actually be the scientific proof that we have other dimensions. And then some scientists who are brave, they actually try to connect this Higgs particle to this ether, to this divine spirit. And that, for me, is a very, very interesting experiment and something that could really open up doors to even a lot of skeptics. That's why I mentioned that in the book.
Well, I think it's a very good point. You bring out so many different perspectives. And much of it is from a scientific positioning, but also there's the philosophical side. And it's intriguing that in our particular time moment that these variables are coming in, because it's creating paradigms in the thinking of people. And in some respects, it's rather intimidating because many people will say, well, I can't accept that. That goes against my entire belief system. But
yeah.
Often what they don't understand is that it actually is not against the belief system. It is expanding the belief system. It is dealing with the shedding of old, useless, what I call perspectives,
yeah,
that do not fit in the world so that you can grow into the greatness of what is available to you.
Yeah.
And I think that this is absolutely fascinating. Zygmunt Bauman, you talk about him, and he has distinguished between having an identity and making one.
Yes.
And your statement here is having an identity is founded on who we are, our true,
yes,
nature, whereas making an identity is what Jung talks about, projecting or imagining an,
yes,
identity.
Exactly. Because we live in a world that likes to condition us. I mean, everybody likes to, you know, TV, organizations, everybody likes to make imprints on us and project onto us. So knowing your true identity, this is really, you can say, this is the philosophical project, but I also believe it is a religious project of enlightenment. Finding out who your true nature is, that is really the way I interpret my own near-death experience, and the way I interpret the research is that it is really about enlightenment. Finding your true nature, returning home to your true self. Because what many people who have a near-death experience explain is that they call it a homecoming. You are coming home to yourself. You return home to your true nature. So that seems to be the goal of the near-death experience. And it also seems to be, if we interpret from near-death research, it also seems to be the goal of life, is to become enlightened and discover your own true nature. Because what's really interesting in the research, when you look at the cultural conditioning, you will see that a Christian will meet the deceased relatives or Christ. But then you will have, in other cultures, you will have a Buddhist, he will meet a Buddha statue or something that is significant to his religion. So it's kind of relative who we actually meet. But one interesting study was done that found out that 88% of people, they experience the essence, the heart of the near-death experience as these positive feelings of bliss and love and peace that I talked about in the beginning, and then also as a heightened awareness. So it seems that this heightened awareness is at the center of the experience. It happens more often than the experience of the light. it is really the awareness, the enlightened awareness is really the center of the experience. And then when you connect that to the homecoming of connecting, coming home to yourself, that is really what it seems to be the essence in the near-death experience. And that, therefore, also that seems to be the project of learning, of growing your soul, of coming home, of learning your true nature. That is really the project and the purpose of life, if we interpret based on near-death research.
You have a quote from Robert Sachs, and I really liked it, and it's pay attention, and I'm going to read it directly from your book.
Yeah.
And this is how it is. Pay attention not only to the present, but also by reflecting on the days, weeks, months, and perhaps years that have brought you to this moment. You are learning constantly. Life school is never out until the final bell. For no matter what we conceive of happening afterward, heaven, hell, another life, we continue to work through a labyrinth that is deep, often incomprehensible, yet workable and in keeping with our original design. Just relax, pay attention, suspend judgment, opportunity abounds. Remember, nothing is ever lost. I thought those words were very, very powerful because it's not escapism, it's mindfulness. I'll use the word that you use in your book. This is where you are right here, right now, in this moment.
Yeah, and that's all there is.
Right here, right now, right in this moment. And it has an effect on what may evolve, but it's what we're doing right now at this moment when we're consciously present with it that has the value because it sends out its own ripple effect in one way or another.
Yes, exactly. It is, in a way, heaven is right here, right now. The chance to love is right here, right now. You could say the words, what is not given is lost. You have the chance right now to give love. In a way, you could say, in this moment, you have the chance to be alive, to be aware, to share this love, this peace with everybody who you are quantum entangled with, who you are interconnected with. And from that perspective, being in the now and trying to share this love, this compassion, is really what we have. All we have is this now. You could also say, instead of saying what is not given is lost, you could say all we have is what we give in the moment, in this moment. All we give, all we do in this moment, that's reality. That's the only reality.
Powerful words and a fascinating book, Awakening After Life. My guest has been Renee Jorgensen. Renee, what is your website that people can go to find out more about the research that you have so diligently been able to record and the other things that you have to offer?
Yeah, my personal website is www.renejorgensen.com. That's RENEJORGENSEN.com. And then I also have a website for the book for people who are interested in that. It is www.awakeningafterlife.com.
Renee, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my guest, and keep on sharing because the research and the personal experience that you had is a good one.
Thank you very much, and thank you so much for having me on the show and allowing me to share.
It's my pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Now, remember, Awakening After Life is Renee's book. And you can go to his website, reneejorgensen.com, RENEJORGENSEN.com. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
This is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. 877-876-5227 is the number in the U.S. Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, before we go to our first caller, I do want to mention to those of you who are listening for the first time, we're so delighted you're able to join us. And if you wonder what it is that you have to do, well, we're going to show you in just a minute here. And also, I wanted to mention if you have any special stories, et cetera, that you want to share with me, send it to me, Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's DelphiInternational.com, so that I can share them. I'm so delighted with some of the stuff that I've been getting, and I'm going to be sharing it with you, my listening audience, as I'm able to do so. Meanwhile, let's show you how it's done on the Donna Sebo Show, and if you want to call in, the number is 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756, also 530-876-3222. Welcome, caller, to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hello?
Hi, dear, first name or initial?
Oh, thank you. I can't hear you very well. But it's very soft, but my first name is also Donna.
Your first name is Donna, too. Where are you calling from?
Olympia.
Olympia, Washington.
Yes.
Well, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Donna, the first thing I am looking at in my mind is a lot of pressure. I think you've got some agendas that you are trying to meet, and you are pulling together as quickly as you can the loose ends that are around you, and yet I'm seeing you standing, and this is symbolic, I believe, standing in the middle of the room and saying, you know, the more I try to push this, the more frustrated I'm getting, and I actually feel like I'm going around in circles. Mm. You are not wrong. You are correct in what you are perceiving. So what I would like for you to do is to be aware of the fact that you're going to be changing how you work with things, changing how you are approaching what needs to be done. And there is a sense of relaxation that comes in, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about because there's no stress here. It's a flow. That word is a very good word to use, and it's like you're in a rhythm with yourself and with your circumstances. I think what's happening to you is that you're downplaying being superwoman. You are subconsciously and consciously being more deliberate in what you want to give attention to. And you are realizing you get more done when you are more focused. So though you seem to be in this turning around in circles a little bit, it's not going to last very much longer, hon. Quite a bit of travel opportunity that's going to come your way, and I feel as if you are going to be so thrilled with the results because it's going to enable you to have that sense of relaxation that you need. And this is including some short trips, maybe two-day trips, maybe three-day trips, more of those, I think, than long ones, like for 2 weeks to a month. although you will have an opportunity to take the equivalent of a two-week trip. But it's like when you take these little breaks where you're out and about and traveling, that means a lot more to you and you're getting a lot more from it. What's on your mind? What did you want to ask me about today?
Well, that was wonderful. Thank you very much. I've applied for some jobs out there, and one in particular I'm really interested in. It's good paying and stable and kind of what I'm looking for right now, and I just want to look and see how that's going to show up in my life.
Well, what kind of work are you looking for? What is it that's of interest to you?
Well, I'm currently a realtor. However, it's not very good. You know, it's not very good right now,
mm-hmm.
and I need something. I want to keep real estate in my life, but I may need something that is long-term, stable, and I need to make a significant amount of money more than I was before. My husband recently passed away, so I have a lot of responsibility to carry.
All right, but I need to have the answer to the question, what kind of work are you looking for? And I agree, don't drop the real estate.
Okay, yeah, I'm not going to drop the real estate. I applied for a job at a college that I used to work at in a different department in administration, in admissions and registration.
Well, I'm not quite sure that you're going to get that.
Okay.
And I want you to not hold your hopes for that, but there are a couple of other businesses that I think might be very interested in your administrative skills. And I don't know what the income level is that you're looking at, but I would say if you're looking at about the $50,000 plus level, there are some positionings that are going to be available, but you will have to commute.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to ask yourself, how far are you willing to commute? And you're going to probably commute north, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that if you just determine how far you're willing to commute, and one of the things that you should inquire about is telecommuting going to be possible for you? And I'll tell you why this should be a consideration. Though there might be a particular office environment and there would be work that you would need to do, you might be able to do much of what would be considered mundane paperwork from your own computer at home,
mm-hmm.
and thereby maybe cut down commuting 2 days a week and commute on 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to be open to asking that type of a question. Is this something that the positioning you would be considered for, would there be that option that you could work with?
Okay.
I think you'd still have to be in the office. I am seeing a positioning that would offer that to you.
So,
and that would be optimum. And then that would allow you to also do some real estate on the side, because you're going to make a very good investment with real estate, actually two of them, mm-hmm. that I think are going to serve you well long term. So I think it's important for you to keep up your skills in the real estate market and do it part-time.
So perhaps maybe I should be looking at property management, maybe.
That might be a very good arena. If you were able to be into a positioning or with a mortgage company or, you know, look along those lines that have an affiliation with the real estate market.
Okay.
Because it's not going to disappear. It's just going through a flux, and gracious, that happens more frequently than people want to even acknowledge.
Mm-hmm. And my other question is, you know, we do have several rental properties, and we have a home that I live in right now, and I'm concerned about, you know, having enough money to keep these properties. And the main, I think I can handle the rentals, but the one that we live in, the home we have right now is the one I'm just not sure how I'm going to be able to make it in that house.
Well, what you need to do is sit down with someone, and if you have a good CPA, you need to sit down and really let them help you with the numbers. How long ago did your husband pass away, dear?
February 9th.
All right, so this is pretty recent.
Yes.
And this is something that when you have this dramatic a change, you've got a lot of stuff to go through. It's no wonder I saw you standing in the middle of the room feeling like you're going around in circles.
Yeah.
So instead of focusing on, gee whiz, I may not be able to do this, that, or the other, don't go there first.
Okay.
Go to a CPA. Say, I need some help here. And maybe you've got a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
that's really good with numbers and that has a good level thinking pattern about themselves. But what you want to do is say, I want someone that I can sit with that's going to keep my information confidential, and a good CPA will do that, and go through every single item of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that mentally you're aware of it, but when you're working with someone else, it helps to ground the thinking. Mm-hmm. Then look at what your numbers are for your debt responsibility. Your rentals are a very good investment, and it wouldn't surprise me if instead of selling the house that you're in, that you might consider selling one of the rentals, consolidating that money so it would go towards the home you are in, because you're not ready to release your home at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also going to afford you the space for an office at home, which is what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things that you need to look at, and you need to look at it with clarity and without emotion. All you're talking about is property. You're living in a house, which is your home, but it's not the only house in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be able to just deal with things as they are. I think you're going to get through this and actually do beautifully, but you need some help.
Okay.
So don't be afraid to ask for that.
Okay. That's very helpful.
Good. I'm glad, hon. By the way, I've got a class coming up on the 19th of this month.
Where?
And it's going to be held in Tacoma at the Center for Spiritual Living. Maybe you can come on. It's only going to be for 4 hours on Saturday, April the 19th. I hope you can come.
Well, that's a possibility. Thank you very much. I used to come see you in the 80s when you used to come to Olympia to the hotel here. I think it was
the Westwater. That's right.
So it's been a long time, and I would enjoy seeing you again.
Well, why don't you give me a call at my office? My number is 800-872-8852.
Okay.
And I'll be glad to tell you about the registration and everything else.
Thank you.
You're welcome, hon.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Also, 530-876-3222. And just give me your first name or initial. Of course, I always want to know where you're calling from, and we'll take it from there. By the way, for those of you listening in Washington, before we go on break, I do want to mention my class, and especially in Western Washington. I don't often have the opportunity to give classes, but this one I'm really looking forward to. It's going to be Saturday, April the 19th. It's from 10 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, and we're serving lunch as well. So it's all about mental ecology. This is spring. Everything's turning green. It's a great time to jumpstart what your personal vision is, the intuition part of you. You want to be able to hone into that, and also problem solving. We'll help you clarify your perspectives, objectives, and whatever your life purpose is that you feel at this moment is significant to you. Beauty, style, and greatness from the inside out. This is being held at the Center for Spiritual Living, which is at 206 North J Street in Tacoma. It's $89 for the class, and again, it's going to include lunch. And if you'd like to make a reservation, call 253-383-3151. That's 253-383-3151. By the way, this building is an historical building. It's 100 years old this year, and part of the funds are going to be going towards the repair of this historical building. So again, it's April the 19th, Saturday, 10 a.m. until 2. I'd love for you to come. And if you want to, you can also call me at my office, 800-872-8852. Mental ecology. It's a great time to do it. Let's go to a break. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I know we've got a caller on the line waiting, but I do want to give you the phone number in case you'd like to chat as well. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And 530-876. 3222. Let's go to our very patient caller who's been waiting. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Bill, and I'm calling from California, La Quinta, California.
La Quinta. Where is that?
La Quinta. Hi. I wanted to ask you a question. Well, I actually had two, but if you only do one, that's fine, too. About work. I'm trying to get going to an interview for a new job, and I wanted to
All right. First, I want you to relax about this interview.
Okay.
I want you to realize that you have the skill set that would serve this interview well. But when you're asking me the question, Bill, I also want to say to you that you really need to know that you are not going to be in a position exactly as you want to be for about 2 years. So I want you to look at any opportunity that comes your way as what I call the refining of the self. I would look at those positions that will enable you to step up in your skill acquisition. What kind of work are you looking for, Bill?
Sales, marketing, or advertising.
All right. If you're interested in sales, marketing and advertising. Marketing and advertising are very distinct as an entity, and so is sales. Now, if you want to do the sales for marketing and advertising, I would evaluate various firms because good salespeople are really tough to find. And what I would say is go for the environments that perhaps are going to demand the most from you, but also are going to give you an opportunity to develop skill sets that otherwise you might not have the chance to develop. And eventually, you are going to, and I'd say this is about 9 or 10 years down the road, form your own company where you're going to be able to utilize all of these bits and pieces of experience and knowledge that you're gaining. You're on a learning curve, however, and this is important for you to recognize. And if you work with it, it's going to serve you very, very well. In fact, I'm seeing you being able to get a positioning within 4 to 6 weeks. And if you really give it your best and don't try to look at the grass being greener on the other side picture too much, you will discover that you're going to have people that are really going to be supportive of you. And you need to look at that area of industry or business that you really want to get to know inside out, whether it would be with cars, whether it's with technology, whether it's with medicine. I wouldn't care what the arena was. Look at that arena that really grabs you, that really talks to you and to your very self. Because a good salesperson, if they really believe, and you can be quite good at this, if they really believe in what they're doing, they just shine. And they don't have a hard time convincing people because they know that what they're selling has merit.
Okay.
Is that making sense to you?
It's making very much sense, a lot.
Right. What arena are you looking at wanting to excel in? What is it that's your deep interest?
Well, I've had a background in hotel and also in advertising and public relations, so in hotel management also. So I'm sort of like just looking to get into the market and find out what's going on.
So you want to get into the business of, you know, the tourism? Is that what you're looking at? What is it particularly? Just because you have the background in hotels doesn't mean you have to stay in hotels.
No, I understand that. I was looking at, they have a sales position I guess you would call it, booking conventions, and
mm-hmm.
they also had a sales position for entertainment.
Okay.
Booking entertainment.
All right. So this is something that you have an interest in, and again, go for it. But it's not going to be the ultimate. It's going to be part of your learning curve.
Okay.
But it will serve you well if you go into it, and if this is the arena you want to be a part of, that's what you need to look at. What is the arena that when you hear about it, maybe it's, you know, sports or whatever, when that pushes your buttons, you say, now that I could get excited about. Then you'll know you're in that venue that suits you, and then you can refine it.
Okay. That's good.
And I want to thank you for your call. I just have a little bit of time left before we're going to close out.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bill, and thank you for calling in. How'd you learn about the show?
Actually, my wife told me that I should call and ask you. And then that was my second question. I was going to ask you, how are things going to work out with my wife and I?
Well, I think you've got a pretty good wife. She made a very good suggestion.
Yeah.
And I think you have a chance for a very, very good, not a chance, but very much the opportunity to make this into something that is going to be solid and strong. It's up to you.
Okay.
No magic bullets here. It's hard work.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bill. Thanks for calling in, and thank your wife for being so wise. This is Donna Siebel, and before we go, I've got to share a cute story with you. I got this, and I just loved it. It's from a guy called Red, and he said, Donna, I got to share this with you. This is about a bungee cord. Alice and Frank are bungee jumping one day, and Alice says to Frank, you know, sweetheart, we could make a lot of money running our own bungee jumping service in Mexico. Well, Frank thinks this is a fabulous idea, so together this couple pool their money, buy everything they'll need, a tower, an elastic cord, insurance, everything. They go to Mexico and begin to set up on a village square. They're constructing the tower. A crowd begins to assemble. Slowly, more and more people gather to watch them while they're working. When they finish, there's such a crowd. Oh, they thought, Alice and Frank did, this is a great time to give a demonstration. So Alice jumps. Of course, she's attached a bungee cord to her waist, naturally, folks. She bounces at the end of the cord, and when she comes back up, her husband notices that she's got a few cuts and scratches. Now, unfortunately, Frank isn't able to catch her, and she falls down again, bounces and comes back up, and this time she's bruised and she's bleeding, and Frank again misses her, and Alice falls again and bounces back up, and this time she's really not in very good shape. She seems to have a couple of broken bones and is almost unconscious. Well, Frank catches her this time and says, oh, sweetheart, what happened? Was the cord too long? And she was barely able to speak, and Alice gasped, no, Frank, the bungee cord was fine. It was the crowd. What the heck is a piñata? I couldn't resist it. This is Donna Siebel. Oh, I know. We're almost out of time here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Just understand, you've got to pay attention to what's going on around you and sometimes the cultural beliefs that people have. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow right here, and we're going to be talking with how you can optimize your life with Dr. Bernie Dahl. You're not going to want to miss him. He's just a great, great guy. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.